We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the Mother's Justice Show on 1150 AM KKNW. Seattle, Bellevue. I'm your host, Reverend Walden. I'm so happy. This is Black History Month. I love Black History Month because I grew up every day was Black History. Hello. So we didn't have to just have 1 month for it. Oh, I'm so happy about this month that we get to have. I want to bring on my local guest, Mr. Rye. He's a history maker himself and been around. Oh, we want to thank Eric also. Hey, Eric, I hope you're doing well. I hope you had a great weekend.
I did. Thank you.
All right. Hi, Mr. Rye. How you doing,
Reverend Harriet?
Oh, I'm wonderful. I love this month. I really do. I mean, I grew up with Black History being every day and singing our precious song, Lift Every Voice and Sing, you know, and that song made us strong. I wish we'd sing it every day now. Every day of my life, I sung that song. I love it.
Well, no, that's great. It tells our story, that's for sure.
It does. It tells our story, and it tells us to be true to our native land and to our God, and to keep going. You know, that song kept you going, and I didn't know what the regular song was until I got to be 18. But I tell you, from two to three, all the way to 18 years old, I sung it once a day, every day for my life. So, yeah. So this is our month, and people complain about it. But I think when Mr. Woodson came up with the Black History, he included Frederick Douglass' birthday and then Abraham Lincoln's birthday. That's why February was chosen, not because it was a shortest month, but because those two people had such an impact on the Negro.
I'm just thinking, initially it was Black History Week, wasn't it?
Well, it was.
Before it was Black History Month?
Well, then it got to be Black History Month, but it was. But if you grew up in segregation and the Black pictures was up every day, then it was every day.
Yeah, well, for the first 10 years of my life, I was in Shreveport, Louisiana, and I knew all about that.
Yeah, so it's every day. So, you know, you didn't have to dust it off. And I don't know when it was changed to one to a month. I probably need to research that and find out. I don't know that. Yeah. But I knew it was just every day in my life because that's what the world was like. So
that's anyway. For sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what's going on?
I've been in, like I said, my give you a little Black history on Eddie Rye Jr. My dad was appointed to be the Northwest organizer of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters in 1950. And his two older brothers wouldn't take the job because they were older than my father. He was the youngest one in the family, and their children were in Southern University at the time. And Eddie Rye Sr.'s children were in grade school and not in school. So they said we could take care of the kids if something happened to Eddie. So he moved us up here in 1952. And he lived with, he had a room, Reverend A.J. Bowles and him both had a room at the Martins, which is on 23rd, right off Madison, Laura and Terrell Martin. And they own the Madison Street Cafe on Madison Street, right between 21st and 20th Avenue. As a matter of fact, a descendant of the Martin family, Theo Martin, now is the owner of Island Soul.
So oh,
that
really?
Restaurant, yeah, that restaurant okay. stuff has been in that family for a pretty long time. Oh. Now, I had this job 70 years ago, so I am Black history. I can recall when we only had one bridge with something in the middle of that. And I can also recall that in those days, I think the Gayton family might have been the first family to move across then 28th, then Empire, then Martin Luther King Jr. Way to 33rd Avenue and Pine. And if I do recall that their house was firebombed.
Wow. And
most of the housing transactions occurred through First, private families, primarily Jewish families selling to Blacks. Then there was a realtor by the name of Morris Hardcastle, who was very friendly and had a lot of Black friends, and he was very helpful. As a matter of fact, in the late 60s, early 70s, Camp actually had a program, the office was on 34th and Cherry, where they was trying to get Black homeowners. And that was one of the programs at Camp when there was an effort, a legitimate effort, to try to help Black folks. But another thing that happened is that at that particular time, most of our interactions really were with Japanese, and more Japanese and Filipinos and Chinese, but primarily with Japanese growing up in those early days. And like I said, we had, it was, Seattle was still segregated. If you got caught in the wrong neighborhood in the 50s, you won't get pulled over if you were walking or driving. But they know the people, because back in those days, a lot of Black women were doing housekeeping and housework for affluent white families. And the police and everybody else knew who those folks were. If they were in Magnolia or somewhere, before we could move out there, we could go to Fort Lauderdale if we was in the Army. But and then a lot of Black folks came up here. One would get a job and send down to Louisiana or Texas or somewhere else to bring the relatives up here, because my first cousin, Foster Anderson Sr., moved up here in mid-50s, had got a job at Boeing, and eventually moved his family up here. So a lot
That's what Jeff Woods did, too. Once Jeff Woods got a job, he brought a lot of people from West Virginia, I believe it was.
Yeah, Rachel, Everett, also known as Dickie, Tom Woods, who was the president of Liberty Bank, and tried to open up a downtown office, and people went berserk. You're supposed to stay on 24th and Union. You're not supposed to have a branch downtown. But Tom Woods had that foresight, very intelligent brother. That was one of the things that they just didn't like about it. Stay in your lane. It was almost like in 1972, when Dr. Rosalind Woodhouse was the executive director of the Centenary Motivation Program, I was directing the education program, and she allowed me the flexibility to be chair of the Central Seattle Community Council Housing Federation's Housing Committee. And in December 1973, we dropped the first report on redlining of the central area.
Wow. Now,
we had folks out painting red lines around the community. And then we also went downtown and painted a red line around the downtown Seafirst Bank. And my cousin, late cousin, Torres McCall, had just started working there. He'd been there 2 weeks. And the folks said, "You know any of the people on that video?" He said, "No, sir, I don't know. I don't know anybody." He just called his cousin. But his wife was pregnant at the time, and the brother needed the job. So it also got to the point where in 19, this was a prolonged kind of thing, where we would actually put the names of these bankers up on, if they wasn't there, it'd be an empty chair. And it's one of those situations where six or seven banks had made like four or five loans in like 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
And so it was pretty tough. And then now,
and the Sunday contribution was going into those banks, and they still wouldn't lend nobody no money.
Exactly. Right. Well, the good example was that in the early 70s, Don Dudley on KYAC, had an FM and an AM station worth $2 million, and the banks would loan him $200,000.
Wow.
I mean, that's
what that ran him out of business, man. Wasn't that terrible?
Yeah. And then I guess the other part of Black history I talked about is my mentor was a Republican. His name is Dr. Arthur Allen Fletcher.
Yes.
He and Sam Smith both won the first citywide elections by Blacks in 1968. Dr. Fletcher won in Pasco, and Sam Smith won in Seattle.
Wow. So
that was the first time that the Blacks had won citywide elections. Then we go down to the Jackson campaign is really, I think, was one of the most invigorating factors in the Black and minority community, as well as the progressive white community, because when Jesse Jackson announced he was running for president, more people of color than ever sought office all across the country. And a lot of them didn't do that well in 84, but in 88, with Charles Rollin computerizing the Jackson campaign, a lot of good things happened. The chair
I didn't know late Charles Rollin did that.
Yeah, he certainly did. And Jesse Jackson won the popular vote, but because of the precinct, you know, you go to your precincts and vote, he didn't win the nomination there, but he won the popular vote. And two individuals who were chairs of his campaign in Virginia, Doug Wilder in 84.
Doug Wilder.
Yeah, Norris Douglas Wilder. And David Dinkins in New York with his chairs in 84 in New York and in Virginia.
Really?
And the next, in 1986, I believe, Doug Wilder was elected governor of Virginia and David Dinkins was elected mayor of New York. And so, matter of fact, in that same, in 84, we won one legislative district, 37th, but Jesse Weinberry defeated an incumbent in the 43rd legislative district. Bill Burns, I work with the Federation. But, we have to also look back. George Washington Bush, who came out with a lot of money out here, got to the Columbia River. He couldn't turn left because that was Oregon Territory. The only way you could be in Oregon Territory and be black is to be a slave. He made the right. And his son, Owen Bush, was a member of the first Washington State Legislature in 1889, and he sponsored the legislation to make Washington State College become a reality, which is now Washington State University. George Washington Bush also was responsible for helping a lot of folks of all the ethnic persuasions to stay on their feet in hard times. He had inherited a great deal of money from someone in Philadelphia on his way out here. So
also he was responsible for helping making Washington a state because Canada wanted it because it was a territory. And,
exactly.
And Canada wanted it. And so he was instrumental in helping Washington become a state. And all of this is what is it called? What is this critical thing that people don't want you to teach?
Oh, critical race theory. They don't want
to. As if they're going to teach it anyway to first graders. It's
amazing. Have a calendar for my wife's brother-in-law, and every day of the year he talks about it. The calendar talks about who was lynched, who was tortured every day, and other significant events that happened in the Black community. It's
Equal Justice?
No, this here, he's from Atlanta, Georgia. Equal Justice Initiative, right.
Oh, yeah, Equal Justice, out of Montgomery.
That's what it looks like right there, and that's the back right there.
I would
advise everybody, every Black person and white person in Florida needs to get a copy of it.
Well, you know, that's true. That's really true, because Florida got a lot of atrocities in there. But on the other side of that, it would be really good if somebody made a calendar, but every day that we did something that was important to American history, like medicine. I mean, if it wasn't for Charles Drew.
It includes all that, too. That's what
it does. Okay.
The atrocities and all of the
glory.
Historical benefits and all the progress we helped this country make.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Because if it has atrocities and the glory, then you're not left with doom and gloom. Yeah.
Yeah. History of Racial Injustice, 2023 calendar. And you got it right. This Equal Justice Initiative calendar.
Right. That comes out of Montgomery. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, we need that. And we need, you and I, we know a lot, but it's the younger kids who are picking up their weapons and harming themselves and other people that don't know this. Because thing that Bobby used to say on the Chris radio show, our history makers, if you know your history, you know your greatness. Bobby used to always say. It's about knowing your history, knowing your greatness, and knowing our contributions. I mean, and then you take it all the way back to the continent, because like every time you pick up your cell phone, you got coltan in there. You got something that comes from the Congo. That's the only place it is in the world. And all these electronic gadgets got something that comes from Black people. I mean, that's where it's at. So,
to encourage the members of the Black Caucus to invest in African American companies and that's trying to do this stuff with the various African countries. For Mozambique, for example, has more natural gas than Russia. And there are a lot of other things that we could be doing.
So Mozambique has more gas than Russia?
Yes.
Oh my goodness!
There's a lot of things. So I'm working with Hayward Evans is really, really working hard on it, and I'm working with Peter Gashuru, who is the founder and director of CEO of the Pacific Northwest African Chamber of Commerce. When folks come through, I think the ambassador from South Africa is supposed to be here I think on the 28th of February.
Okay, and okay, that's good to know. I mean, that's good to know. I probably won't be in the place to meet him, but that's good to know.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think they're talking about having a reception at the Royal Esquire Club.
Oh,
I think
okay.
Somebody in your family might be a member.
Yeah, well, that's true. they're bringing in the youngins. So he's considered a youngin. Yeah. Well, this is really good. You know, it's always good to have you on and know our history. And we know we have a lot of the stuff across the nation we could be talking about. But, you know, we're going to spend some time praising ourselves and our ancestors and all the people who came before us and all the work they did. So this is wonderful. This is wonderful. All right.
So,
all right. This is good. So you take care and continue.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You look good in that red shirt. You know, hey.
That's how the blood we shed.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It'll fill up many rivers. Many rivers.
There you go. There you go.
Many rivers. That would. All right, Mr. White. Thank you so much. We'll be talking.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care. Are you listening to the Mother's Justice Show on 11:50 a.m. KKNW? I'm your host from Walden. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Rosebuds know the bloom in early May. Just as hate knows love's the cure, you can rest your mind assured that I'll be loving you always. Now I can't reveal the mystery of tomorrow.
The Mother's Justice Show is brought to you by H.G. Walden and the Virtues Healing Circles. Join us for Wisdom and Wellness with Reverend Walden, a monthly virtual and in-person healing circle that focuses on community healing and growth. Learn more at virtueshealing.com. That's virtueshealing.com. Also, be sure to join our healing group on Facebook. Again, visit us at virtueshealing.com today.
My husband, Alex Hussey, was hit by an IED in Afghanistan.
I was point man on foot patrol, and I stopped on the bomb. Lost my legs and left hand in an explosion.
And he suffered a severe traumatic brain injury.
As America's veterans face challenges, DAV is there.
There are so many mountains to climb, and we do it together.
With the right support, more veterans can reach victories great and small.
Seeing Alex learning how to snow ski, that's life-changing.
DAV provides a lifetime of support to veterans of every generation, helping more than a million veterans each year.
Alex did it. He skied down this mountain. That's something he won't forget.
With the right support, there are no limits.
To see him on that slope and smiling like that, we'll be taking this home.
This has meant so much. Thank you, DAV.
Alex Hussey, thank you for your service. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Hi, this is Dr. K. Mahina Intron, inviting you to tune in on Mondays on 1150 KKNW at 5 p.m. to Dr. K's Attuning to Your Abundance, where we honor everyday abundance through positive messages, poetry, music, affirmations, and writing exercises. For more information, contact drkworkshops@gmail.com or Facebook Dr. K's Abundance.
Going our own way every day. Alternative Talk 1150.
Well, good afternoon. You're listening to the Mother's Justice Show on 1150 AM KKNW. I'm your host, Reverend Walden, and it's Black History Month. And some of us know that Black History is every day, but I'm so happy that it is. And I want to thank Eric for the music that he plays. He's always right on time. I'm going to bring in my next guest. She's been on many, many times. Her name is Mrs. Frances Oliver from Sanford, Florida. And we're going to continue to talk about Black History. I mean, I've had Mr. Rye on. He was talking about Black History in Seattle. Actually, he came from New Orleans, Louisiana, when he was 10 years old. So he's been here a long time. So how you doing? How you doing, Frances?
I'm doing good, Harriet, and you?
I'm doing good. I love this month. I love history. You know, I'm a history buff. I mean, I'm a closet scholar. I love to study. So I love history, and I love what you're doing down there in Seminole County and Sam in Goldsboro and all of the work that you're doing. And I know you got a big announcement, so I'd like you to make that big announcement. That's what's going to be happening there this year for Goldsboro Museum.
Yes, Harriet, we're getting a new museum. We're getting a new building, and it's a bigger building than what we're in now. We will have 21 parking spaces plus the parking spaces on the streets, and we'll have a amphitheater.
Oh, yes. It's going to still be on 13th Street?
On Historic Goldsboro Boulevard.
Okay,
remember,
okay,
we
okay.
Changed the names. We changed
that's
the names
right, that's right, that's
ago.
Right. You know, you changed, and I've been gone so long, and when I come, you know, yes, I understand that. I understand that, and it's lovely. It's lovely. I was there at the old, I did get a chance to come to your museum that you have now and have spent some time there and to see it, because you took me there. And it took me to see
Harriet,
the Trayvon Martin.
I didn't tell you before, but we got four studios or four chambers in this building, and we got a library.
Wow, a library.
Your book will be in our library. And
well,
I don't
thank
know if
you
remember the Barringtons here in Sanford, but the library is going to be named after Eugene Barrington.
I think he was one of our big donors. Yeah, was he in the class of 63?
No, he was in the class 61 with me.
Okay. Well, he had a brother, though. Didn't he have a brother?
Yes, Sylvester Barrington. And
okay,
they were all boys. They had one sister, Shirley.
Yeah, I thought it was somebody in Barrington in the class of 63 in my class, but I could be mistaken.
It may have been.
Mm-hmm, uh-huh. Mm-hmm, yes. So, yeah, his family is almost like yours, reverse, had all boys. Your family had all girls, but they did. So they had all boys, but then they had a daughter. So not quite like
that. Yeah, they had one girl.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think right now all the brothers are dead because Eugene died about 6 months ago.
Oh, bless his heart. Bless his heart. Well, he left a legacy. And I'm so happy you
did. He wrote his thesis for his PhD. He wrote his thesis on the migration from Sanford to Rochester. And he donated his thesis to the museum to be put to a book.
Oh, that's wonderful, because I know about that migration, because a lot of people, that was up with mobility. People was leaving Sanford, going to Rochester, New York.
That's right. It was like a 40-year migration period.
That's right. And then a lot of them came back to retire, though. I mean, after they
no, they
years.
Came back after they retired.
That's what I meant to say. After they retired,
yeah.
They came back.
Yeah, see, it was three companies. They went there in the early 60s and the 50s to Rochester to pick apples.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they went to pick apples. You don't remember when they used to come home around Thanksgiving and bring all those good apples back from Rochester, them big old sweet juicy apples. And
oh, well, I know that a lot of the people
go in May.
Right. I knew that people left. I knew that students that I went to school with left early and came back late. I mean, I knew that.
Yes.
I mean, they left before school was out and they came back after school was already started. Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's.
And most of them that went after they got there and got settled, they got jobs at Strongbird Carson, General Dynamics, and Kodak.
That's
and,
right.
And so,
that's right.
So many people migrated from Sanford to Rochester to stop the migration. They brought they brought Strongbird Carson to Sanford. They brought General Dynamics to Sanford. And so,
oh, that's how they got to Sanford, because I think Zonnie used to work at one of those companies you just named. Johnny,
yes.
Me and my cousin.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay.
And so that
wow.
stopped people from going to Rochester to get a job at Kodak and to get a job at Strongbird Carson, because both of them were here now.
Mm-hmm. Wow, wow.
So some of them were able to retire from Strongbird Carson right here in Sanford. Mm-hmm.
Wow, well, they stopped that influx of Black people coming.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you know, the Black history part about this There is a video on YouTube by Edward R. Murrow. You might remember.
I remember him. That's when the news. That's when they brought you the real news. Okay, no fake news. They brought you the real news. It was a lost.
And leader. He did a documentary about the migration from Florida to Rochester.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
Yes, and they also just Google his name in just put his name into YouTube and you'll see the program on YouTube. And when we were children and they were migrating from Sanford to Rochester, they went in trucks.
That's right.
They rode the all the way to Rochester on the back of trucks.
Trucks. That's the same kind of trucks that people used to be on when they were cutting celery. You know, out there in the farm.
Yes.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Because it was no Greyhound, it was no public transportation for Black people because the civil rights laws had not been passed.
That's right. That's exactly right.
That's right. See, mm-hmm. So some people, so it was no. You know what I often think about, Francis, though, the March on Washington, all those buses that took people there, the March on Washington, they had to be owned by Black companies because you couldn't ride. Greyhound wasn't integrated in 1963.
Well,
all those people showed up.
Black on the bus, I guess they could rent the bus from the companies. They had private companies.
I thought. I mean, Black people had some private companies. I mean,
white people had private companies that they would take a bus load at a certain price, but everything on that bus would be Black. It wouldn't be an integrated load.
Okay, well, I mean, I just always think about that. Because, nobody stayed in D.C. They went there for one day and they left. I mean,
they left. Unless, exactly right.
Right. That's right. That's right. But I hear that some people did open their homes to Black people there in Washington, D.C. that day. Oh, and I guess you might have had some Black restaurants and some, some housing. And people did get mm-hmm. to stay in places and eat. But I remember going on the Greyhound bus and it wasn't integrated in that time. I mean, you had to sit in the back.
We had to stand behind the white line. Remember when we got?
That's right.
I went to college in Savannah State from Florida to Savannah, and when you got on that Greyhound bus, you had to stand behind that white line, and that white line was like in the middle of the bus. And if you stand behind that white line, then you were in the back of the bus. You couldn't sit in the front of the in front of that white line.
No, you could not. Because I took the Greyhound bus from Sanford to Montgomery. You're correct about that. And then I took the Greyhound bus from Montgomery to Santa Barbara, California. And that's the truth. We had to sit back there. And then too, it was no real service. A lot of times the little restaurant, the Greyhound bus station, they wouldn't even wait on you. Even on the outside, if you were waiting in the little line to get some food, sometimes they wouldn't wait on you at all. I mean, so you have to, if you didn't carry your lunch, sometimes you'd be in trouble.
Well, when I used to travel to Savannah, my first stop was in Jacksonville. I only had one stop, Jacksonville and then to Savannah. And in Jacksonville, they had a little restaurant. They had a nice restaurant, and they had a little section of it cut off where Black people could sit. Okay.
Wow.
If you could get a chair, they only had about three or four chairs, and then most people stand up and eat. And then the bathroom was right. The door to the bathroom was just right in the dining room almost. But it was that little section they had cut off just for Black people.
Oh yeah, I mean, we do have a story, to tell, living in segregation and all of that. Mm-hmm. But we got joyful stories to tell also, and I know we got a lot of history, and I know that you talk about the history. You too was telling me about Mrs. Brock and Jackie Robinson the other day, and how you were setting the history right on that piece. So you want to talk about that?
Yes, Jackie Robinson was supposed to break the color barrier. In Sanford, and he came to Sanford with the minor league that were playing a game in Sanford,
right,
D-Land, and Daytona. Those are three places they were gonna play a game. When he came to Sanford, he actually came to Daytona. He had just gotten married, so he had a hotel, a place to stay in Daytona. Him and his wife, and so. the manager drove him over to Sanford the day of the game, and it was a day game. Now, if you saw the movie 42 about Jackie Robinson, they had a night game, but it actually was a day game. And the Ku Klux Klan had gathered across the street from the stadium all that day. And the word had gotten out all over Sanford. If Jackie came out that dugout, it was going to be a mess on that field. So the Klan called Chief William, and who was the police chief, and told Chief William to go get Jackie out of the dugout because Jackie was not going to play on that field. Well, Chief William didn't want Jackie to be hurt or harmed or killed on his watch. So he went to the dugout. He got him out the dugout, walked him to his car, and took him down to the police station for safekeeping. Well, three boys, they were about teenage boys. We call them the knothole gang because they were peeping through a hole in the fence watching the game, and they saw police chief when he walked Jackie Robinson off the field. Now, these are stories, Harry, that passed down to us from generation to generation.
Right.
And so the three boys ran to one of the boys was one you may know one of them was Oscar Murphy Sr. Do you remember Miss Oscar Murphy? And
yes.
And Mr. Dixon, Dad Dixon, and Mr. McLean. They were young boys at the time. They ran and told Mr. Brock that Chief William had taken Jackie Robinson to the police station. And Mr. Brock told those boys, said, "You go tell Chief William to bring that boy to my house and don't hurt a hair on his head."
Oh, my goodness.
You know, Chief William did bring him to Mr. Brock's house. It was about 5 o'clock when they got to the house, and it was getting dark. And so they decided it was too late to take a chance to take Jackie Robinson to Daytona with the Ku Klux Klan riding up and down Sanford Avenue, because that's where Mr. Brock's house was.
Right,
that's where
right.
Jackie Robinson was. And that's where he spent the night at Mr. Brock's house with the Ku Klux Klan riding all night in front of his house waiting for them to take him to Daytona. But they didn't take him to Daytona until about 10 o'clock the next day. The game was supposed to be at 3. And they took him to Daytona. And in Daytona, they didn't let him play either. They called the game off.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he didn't play in D-Land either because they locked the doors and wouldn't let him in. But now,
wow.
with Sanford, he came to Sanford first. Now, it seems as if we should have gotten more of Jackie Robinson history here in Sanford, but they denied the fact. They denied everything about what happened here in Sanford with Jackie Robinson until the movie came out. And that's what the man wrote about in the paper last weekend, that Sanford got a bad break when it came to Jackie Robinson, that they didn't print the story right, and the story hadn't been told right. And he made a clear statement that Jackie Robinson never stayed in Mr. Brock's house. Mr. Brock was a black man that lived on Sanford Avenue.
Right.
And that's not true. Mr. Brock told the story himself that he put Jackie. And in the movie, and his wife gave the accounts of all the everything in the movie. His wife gave that, and so she know where her husband stayed.
Right. Well, you know, they didn't want that to happen. And Miss Holly was my music teacher, and she used to talk about Jack. She talked about Jackie Robinson. I didn't quite remember. I thought he stayed at her house, but he stayed at somebody's house there in Sanford. And I remember she told us that in the music class.
That night of the game, he stayed in Miss Brock's house. Now,
right.
He came back to Sanford a couple of other times, and he may have stayed at Miss Holly's house once.
Okay, because she said he did.
Along Sanford Avenue.
Yeah, Miss Holly said that Jackie Robinson had stayed there, because she told us that in our music class.
He stayed in two or three houses along Sanford Avenue, Mr. Brock. But Mr. Brock, in the movie, it was just because that was the day he was supposed to play the game, and the Ku Klux Klan ran him out of there. And the way he wrote the story up last week in the paper is that they treated Jackie Robinson so nice.
Oh,
he said his daddy... He said his daddy put Jackie Robinson in his car and drove him to Daytona, and he did not stay in Mr. Brock's house. I said, nice, Harry, you know, ain't a white man.
Ain't nobody being nice. No, they were not nice to people. They were not nice to Jackie Robinson.
The Ku Klux Klan wouldn't have let him took Jackie Robinson to Daytona
night. No. I mean, all you got to do is extrapolate what you just said, that he didn't get to play at all in Central Florida. I mean, because he didn't play in Daytona, didn't play in D-Land, and didn't play in Sanford. So he didn't play at all in Central Florida.
Mm-hmm. And they denied the story. They did not admit that Jackie Robinson was run out of town by the Ku Klux Klan until the movie came out.
Wow.
And now they want to say the movie, now they want to say 42, the movie 42 didn't do Sanford justice. Just like Trayvon Martin. They don't talk about Trayvon Martin across, huh?
No. That hatred didn't do Sanford justice. So, you know, the hatred is longstanding, friends. But on a side note, as I found out probably about 15 years ago, I'm related to Jackie Robinson because the matriarch of the Walden family, that was, you know, long, long, long time ago when people were still in bondage, she was married to a Robinson also. And so Jackie Robinson, I mean, Jocelyn might have mentioned that to you. I'm not sure. But so Jackie Robinson is related to us also.
See, Daytona named that. Daytona was so guilty that they didn't. The people in Daytona were so guilty that Jackie Robinson was locked out and wasn't able to play until they named their stadium after Jackie Robinson.
Okay.
They have a Jackie Robinson Day over there every year.
Okay.
Sanford has never apologized to Jackie Robinson.
No, they probably won't. No, they won't. Not with the trend that's going now. But could you just talk a little bit for my listeners to know about Goldsboro? And I know it was incorporated in December 1st, 1891. But could you talk a little bit about Goldsboro and what it was and what people's goals? Just a little bit about Goldsboro.
Okay. Goldsboro was established by Mr. William Clark, who was a black man. And his brother, Joe Clark, helped incorporate Eatonville. Eatonville was the first all-black township incorporated in the United States. Goldsboro was number two, okay? And then you had some place in Mississippi was number three. But it weren't that many. But just to think, in 1891, William Clark and his brothers they were educated to the point where they wrote up a charter to establish Goldsboro as a township, which meant that they had to put in their own mayor, their own tax collectors, their own everything. They had their own jail, their own sheriff, their own banks. They had everything that any township had.
Wow.
But the difference between Eatonville, which still got their charter, and Goldsboro, which we lost our charter because the city of Sanford took the charter away, whereas Eatonville land, the land was donated to start Eatonville by a white man. So he made sure that they kept their land.
Wow.
Whereas Goldsboro was people who had migrated from South Carolina, Georgia, some of the other places. When Mr. Sanford was bringing people here to work, and they stayed over in what was called, it wasn't Georgetown then, it wasn't called Georgetown, it was called Tuckertown. They stayed over in what, and so they eventually moved forward and further west of Millersville and established Goldsboro.
Wow.
Okay, now. When Goldsboro lost its charter in 1911, okay, shortly before that, Rosewood, which was an all-black community, it was never a township, but it was all black thriving, do-good black people lived in Rosewood. Well, as you know the story of Rosewood, the Klan burnt Rosewood down. I mean, they burnt everything down. They ran the people. They killed three people. And the people just scattered. Well, Goldsboro Charter hadn't been long taken, and the blacks in Goldsboro were so afraid that they were going to end up the same way, that these white folks were going to burn Goldsboro down too. They also burned the Okoye down. You might have heard about the Okoye massacre.
Right. That was in Orange County.
Yeah, the Okoye massacre was in Orange County because of voting rights, because they wanted to vote, and the white folks didn't want to vote. So it was a cattle town, so they just burnt the whole town down.
And now so you can see why the governor don't want any black history taught, isn't that right?
Oh yeah. And Florida, the hangings that Florida had, and the Groveland Four.
Yeah, you know, I was going to talk about that because I know that. Yeah, and you know, Sanford is in the book The Devil in the Grove that was written by Thurgood Marshall. The Groveland Four.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what about Harry T. Moore?
Yeah, that's right. He lost his life trying to register people to vote. And I think they wind up bringing him to Sanford to see if they could save him.
None of the white hospitals in Mims and Cocoa wasn't no black hospital. None of the white hospitals wouldn't take him. And they had to bring him and his wife because they bombed their house Christmas Eve.
That's right. And they were looking for Dr. Starks to treat them.
Yeah, they found Dr. Starks. The wife lived 3 days, but he died like 3 hours after he was in the hospital.
Right. Well, you know, that's something, the history I didn't know. I just didn't know that Sanford had a part of a hospital, for colored people. I didn't know that then.
No, they didn't have a separate hospital for colored people. What they had, a separate wing for colored people.
That's what I meant to say. Yeah, wing for colored people. I guess growing up, I didn't know that.
My mama was in that hospital, in that segregated wing. Yeah. My mom was in the hospital for a long time in that segregated wing. And we weren't allowed to go in to see her, but we could wave to her at the window, from the window. She could see us from the window. The black people were in the back of the hospital.
Right. Well, you know, Florida has a real, real bad history. I mean, and this guy who is the governor don't want people to know about it.
No, he doesn't want... Well, I'm going to tell you, I think DeSantis using a lot of this to get his name in the news every day.
I do too.
It's just propaganda that he's using to agitate Trump because he can't make up his mind whether he want to run against Trump or not, because number one, he's afraid to run against Trump. But if he can get enough support from the Republican Party, then yes, he would run. So he's saying all of that stuff to try to win over Trump's base, because he knows that Trump base are white supremacists.
They are really, and you know, and they're not ashamed. I mean, well, they wasn't ashamed when we were growing up either. I mean, you know, they come by with their truck, with the rifle in the truck, and the Confederate flag hanging.
They still ride around like that.
They do.
The only thing about it, the black folks ride around their AR-15s.
I think
every black person in Florida from 19 up own at least one AR-15.
Really? Well, at least you know. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I grew up in guns in my house. You grew up with guns in your house, so you didn't grow up in Seminole County without guns in your house. I think most people had guns.
Now you know Florida was a mafia state. Now you know that, and you know mafia people always had guns.
Oh yeah.
Florida was a mafia state. Florida was the crooked state in the Union, and probably still is. Why you think?
Well, yeah, because Batista was still throwing the numbers from Cuba. Before they overthrew, Castro, you know, I mean, Batista was still, and the numbers of people were running the numbers big in Florida when I was a kid.
Yes, and you know, Al Capone and all of them had big old beach houses here, and one of those crooks died in Florida with syphilis. Which one was that?
I don't know.
Was it Al Capone?
Might have been.
I think it was Al Capone.
I do know about the numbers because the numbers guy would come by our house and Mama would play the numbers, okay?
Oh yeah.
And you can play for a dime, for a nickel. And I guess if you got it for a quarter, you might get a lot of money. I mean, in those days it might have been a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it came by
That's right. They had these big old houses. And each house had a maid quarters in the back. They had their own maid that lived in the back. And a lot of these houses still got maid quarters in the back, but they're renting them now as efficiencies.
Oh, yeah, well.
Wow, but I tell you. Not maid quarters anymore.
Well, hey, you know what? But, it's a rich history, and I think we need to know our history, because we need to know how our people have overcome. I mean, really and truly. I mean, we need not to ever get in despair. Because, see, Francis, we've seen this before. I mean, and look at my stepmother, who passed away 2 years ago this summer coming, she was raised in Montgomery, and she was the property she lived on all her life, and she put a new house on it. She said that her grandmother, when at the end of slavery, they told him, Ann, you need to get off of here, and wasn't giving you nothing. She said, they didn't even give you a piece of bread. You know, you had to make your way. So look how we made our way. And some people end was a little bit better, because some people did end up with some property, or they did get something because they might have been, you know, the slave or the owner's children. Some people did come out with land. That's why you have churches, because in a lot of these places, churches was built on that land. But the majority of people who was in bondage when so-called freedom came, they left with nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to close on it. I mean, I don't know, January was cold. I mean, 1863.
Yeah. Well, Harry, I just believe what's happening to us is what happened after Reconstruction. You know,
That's what I thought about too, Francis. I thought about the same thing. Reconstruction only lasts 10 years, and this lasted about 40 years or almost 50 years. But this is the end of the second Reconstruction. We're on the same wavelength,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
Yes.
And, you That's know, right. at the end of Reconstruction, they came up with Jim Crow laws to control us and put us in our place. And now they want to reverse our history. And they want
That's
to take
right.
all our history out the schools. And they want to tell us what to teach. They want to tell us
That's
what
right.
to live, how to live. They even
That's
they
right.
Even
it's
now,
another kind of control. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I want you to read Harry.
Acting like some kind of dictator where he going to tell everybody, he going to tell people what to read, going to tell people what to wear. That they he putting up something now in the state legislature about transdressing, what you call it?
Transgender, trans people who
dress
like,
what they call them people that dress like women and men.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. yeah, it's some kind of drag or something
them,
like that.
Drag. He's mm-hmm, trying to make mm-hmm. he's trying to make drag outlawed in Florida.
Well, you know what he said? We should introduce him to Miss Georgia Brown. I mean, Georgia Black. we should send him a picture of Miss Georgia Black, who lived a whole life.
Exactly.
I mean, that'd be a good idea to just send him a picture of Miss Georgia Black. Okay, before your answer.
Did I tell you that the gay people in Orlando, the gay pride, they have Gay Pride Day in Orlando, and they have a big weekend. And on Friday evening, they have their award ceremony. And I was given an award for the story that I wrote about Miss Georgia Black.
Oh, wonderful. Send me that. Yeah, because,
Google it. Just Google Georgia Black.
Okay, well, then, you know what? Okay, because I did, Georgia Black did come up in my timeline, I reposted
and
it.
And when you get there, there are going to be two stories there. One, which they wrote up in Ebony Magazine in 1957, and then my story, because, you know, she grew up down there with us. She not grew up.
Well, you know, I mean, to tell our listeners who Miss Georgia Black was before we can go.
Okay,
because they don't
Georgia
know.
Black, okay, Miss Georgia Black was written up in Ebony Magazine in 1957. She got sick and had to go to the hospital. And when she went to the hospital, they found out she was a man. And she had lived as a woman for 35 years, and nobody in our neighborhood, which was Harriet's neighborhood too, did not know that Miss George Blight was a man. To us, Miss George Blight was a woman.
A woman.
She was, and
she was good to us too. Hey, wasn't no stuff going on. She was good to us. She made cookies and stuff like that, you know.
She was the neighborhood nurse. She was the neighborhood. She babysat for people. She was a babysitter. Yeah. She was a member. She was an AME. She was a member of St. James AME Church.
Well, that's how
when she died, they closed the streets so that her, when the ambulance drove her body from the church to the graveyard, people were standing on the side of the road to see her casket go by. I love that she was us in Sanford by blacks and whites. And nobody knew that she was a man.
No, and we loved her. We loved her because, you know, it was two blocks from my house.
And if anybody want to read the story, they just Google Georgia Black, Sanford, Florida. And like I said, it's two stories out. One that I wrote where she was raised in our neighborhood, Harriet, and one that Ebony wrote in 57.
Wow. I tell you, I got fond memories of Sanford, though. I mean, really and truly. And I tell people, I don't know what it is to grow up in a violent community like our kids are being scared to go to school. And, you know, uh-huh. I mean, you know, that was not where we lived at. It was not.
Uh-huh. And even when we found out that Miss Georgia Black was a man, whole Sanford found out that Miss Georgia Black was a man. She was not treated like a freak. Or she was not, let's hide this story. Let's hide this.
No. Well, but also, you know, being gay was not nearly as.
Miss George Blake wasn't gay. Miss George Blake had two husbands.
I understand that. I'm just talking about the atmosphere and how people go bum up a nightclub.
She just lived as a woman for 35 years.
Right. Right. Okay. We could. That's a good spin on it. But all I can say is that there's an element of hatred of the other, and it's even worse now than it was. I mean, it's always been against us, but now it's against a variety of all kinds of people.
That's right. And this governor we got trying to tell people how to dress, what to teach your children. And that's why he wants a law against drag dressing in Florida so that the children won't start dressing in drags and all this kind of stuff. He's trying to tell us
he's just spending his time looking at all this GMO food and all what is happening with GMO food and what happens with soy and all that other stuff, how it changes the molecular structure and the DNA in children. So, I mean, that's where he should go to the science and see what's happening. It's not, you know, it's a lot of other stuff out that he could spend his time on. But all of this is to engender hatred. That's all it is. It's to engender hatred.
He wants to stir up these white supremacist groups, and he wants them to support him, because this is what I'm going to do to black folks in Florida. And if I'm elected United States president, I'm going to put black folks in their place.
Because they were determined. They took an oath that another black man would never be president. They took an oath for that. I mean, it's written somewhere. Okay, they got it in their vault.
They better watch out, because we may have a black woman.
Yeah, it's probably in Key Largo someplace.
The first woman that was vice president was black.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, this thing against us is so ridiculous. I mean, because they can't take away our greatness from here, from North America all the way back to the continent. And everything they use today, I'm going to get this list together. Everything they use today, they need to stop using it. A pencil sharpener, an ironing board, an egg beater. I mean, you go on and on and on. And blood. They should refuse blood when they go to the hospital, because behind their blood was a black person, a black man, Charles Drew. But also going into space without Katherine Johnson.
You let one of them need a kidney. They don't care where they get it from. They're getting kidneys from pigs now. So they don't care where they get their kidneys from.
Well, you know, I love history and I love what you do. You're a great historian. I mean, really and truly you are. Maybe next time we talk about Ovida and Midway.
Yeah, but, if you read my post today, you may get some ideas because I was asked a question. Where did Booger Time get its name? And I put it on my Facebook page today.
Okay. All right. And I know you got a lot of young followers. This has been delicious for me because, you know, I love history. I will be to Florida this summer and be hanging out and I'll come back to the class reunion. I know all school reunion that's going to be there. I mean, at the end of the year, probably. So anyway, yeah, well, you take care and continue to have a great day, evening down there in Sanford, Florida, Seminole County, Goldsboro.
All right. And Harry, right. Maybe we can do your show from our new museum.
Oh, yeah, that would be lovely, wouldn't it? Yes, 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 uh-huh. Yes, yes. Yes, that'd be lovely. Well, hey, let's talk about that and how we can plan that. Because I'm planning my show on the road this year. All right. Love you down there. Down yonder. Take care. All right.
All right,
to the book. Thank you. You listen to the Mother's Justice Show on 1150 AM, KKNW, AM in Seattle. It's your host, Reverend Walden. It's my joy to be on the air. I'll see you next week. Take care. Remember Black history. Everything you use almost is something was made by Black people. Take care. Together. Oh.